It's 9 o'clock and I'm calling the San Leandro City Council meeting to order. County clerk, will you please take the floor?
Councilmember Simon is absent. Vice Mayor Cohen?
Present.
And Mayor Gonzalez?
Present.
Thank you. Cora is present.
Would you please take the floor?
After each agenda item is presented, the mayor will ask for committee member comments and then take public comment. You will have 2 minutes for your comment. A countdown timer will appear for the convenience of the speaker and attendees.
So I have to go to A, back to the city manager, Karen Engelbart, to introduce you.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of the Rules Committee. I'm here before you this morning in my role as the staff secretary for the Community Police Review Board. As you may recall, the CPRB is presently structured as a 9-member board with 7 regular board members, each of whom is nominated by district, consistent with our standard practice for most all of our boards and commissions here at the City of San Leandro. And along with those 7 regular members, we also, the board is structured to also include 2 youth members. And those slots or seats are considered to be non-voting ex officio members of the board, and who must be between the ages of 14 and 22. As you may recall, it has been a challenge for the CPRB to find candidates to fill those youth seats. We are fortunate now, though, to have 2 applicants who applied. Copies of their application cover sheets are included in the agenda packet, along with a snapshot of the ordinance requirements that govern those particular seats. And so with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you all have. But I think at a high level, we're seeking direction from the Rules Committee today about any direction you'd like to provide to staff with regard to those applications.
Yes, I will take public comment on this item. Seeing none, I will close public comment. Going back to committee members for discussions or questions. Seeing no questions, I'm assuming that what your question, seeing no questions or comments for that matter, I assume that what you are seeking from this committee is a direction to bring these to City Council as the recommended nominations for the Rules Committee.
If that's the direction of the Rules Committee, then yes.
Okay, so that at this point in time, I'll poll the members by just head nods. We're in agreement to move this to council, that being the recommendation of Rules Committee. Let's move to item 2B, San Leandro Safe Parking Program. We have an update from Human Service Director Jessica Levitan on this item.
Sorry, Janelle, do you want us presenting that here? Please, please. You? Do you have it? Your screen's like extending.
Just 1 moment, please.
Okay.
Should we take a short recess to address...
Hey, Tim, do you have a second for Rules Committee tech help?
Yeah, sure. Where is it?
Council chambers?
I do not.
One way.
Thank you.
Would that be useful if we had it?
Apologies for the delay. IT staff is on their way.
Just for the purposes of our record, because we have officer about 3 minutes and someone listening to this, like, what's going on and all that kind of stuff. Just for the record, we have a little bit of a technology problem, and we're going to take a brief recess. The time is 9:07.
Jessica's presenting, and it's almost like her display is extended, but I can't get it to unextend. That's good.
Thank you for your patience. We're now ready.
So we'll be back on recording. Okay, it is 9:08, about to turn into 9:09, and we're going to resume our meeting of the Rules Committee. It's Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025. We've got Director, Human Services Director Jessica Lowdown here to introduce him to me.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Vice Mayor. I'm here this morning to present an update on the City of San Leandro Safe Parking Program and to receive general feedback around several options for consideration. This morning, I'll be presenting a background of safe parking and how this program came to ideation. Two different typical program models, including RV or oversized vehicle safe parking, as well as vehicular safe parking. Other programs that cities have used to address vehicular homelessness, several options for consideration as we move forward, and then discussion of next steps. In May of 2023, as part of the City Council work plan on housing and homelessness, there was one of the projects listed was to identify safe parking locations in San Leandro. In San Leandro, there is a notable population of individuals experiencing homelessness who are residing in their vehicles. It is slightly lower than the general Alameda County population of individuals residing in their vehicles. In 2022, the census count was 86 estimated individuals living in vehicles, and in 2024, estimated 68 individuals and or households living in vehicles. And that comprises roughly 30% of San Leandro's homeless population. Since that time, staff have been exploring this option for different programs to address vehicular homelessness in San Leandro. Some of these options include inventorying the city, doing an inventory of city-owned property to explore whether or not a safe parking site could be viable on such locations. We've had conversations with faith-based partners who have expressed interest in hosting a safe parking program. We've done initial exploration of commercial properties for sale or for lease in the city. And we've also issued a request for interest for providers of an RV safe parking micropilot to serve 10 RVs experiencing homelessness. I'm now going to talk through RV safe parking as a typical model that other cities and jurisdictions have set up. So again, this is a typical model. That doesn't mean that every city does it this way, but by and large, based on our research, this is what most cities or counties or jurisdictions focus on. The purpose of this type of program is to provide a designated, secure location for households living in RVs or oversized vehicles. It typically features overnight and extended parking options. So what this means is that it's typically a 24/7 operation. It's not an evening operation. It includes access to amenities such as restrooms, waste disposal, and clean water. And there's a focus on safety and community health. Often these programs include support services, such as case management and connection to permanent housing resources, with a focus on moving into stable permanent housing. The typical program goals for RV safe parking are to provide a safe, secure location for households to park overnight or long-term, to ensure access to basic amenities, offer support services with a focus of moving into permanent housing, and really focus on ending that household's vehicular homelessness. And for the broader community, the goal is really to enhance community safety and public health and promote a compassionate, organized response to homelessness. Several jurisdictions have developed RV or oversized safe parking programs. Here we've got the cities of Mountain View, East Palo Alto, and Santa Rosa. Some of these cities are similar in demographics to San Leandro population-wise and homelessness population-wise, whereas, for example, Santa Rosa has a considerably larger homeless population than San Leandro. Typically, what we are seeing is that jurisdictions are utilizing vacant, publicly owned property and or faith-based property. So it's empty parking lots that the city may not be using, or empty parks and converting it into this type of program model, or working with their faith-based partners to identify available parking spaces to set up this type of program. The service amenities often are including case management, restrooms, access to water, and other basic services, as well as security. And as we see here, just from the few programs that we've identified, most are 24/7. However, East Palo Alto does offer just an evening program. The annual operating cost does vary, with the cities of Mountain View and Santa Rosa spending about $1.2 million annually for the associated expenses, whereas East Palo Alto does have a lower annual operating cost as well. Some of the potential challenges with setting up a RV or oversized safe parking site include site availability. By nature, they require a larger physical space. RVs are considerably larger than commercial vehicles and require infrastructure set up to support the RVs. They also require a relatively flat space. RVs are not super great at going uphill. And the site would ideally need access to sanitation as well as electrical hookups and a sewage or a dump station. There's also funding limitations for operating a 24/7 program that considerably increases the costs associated and would require not only initial funding to set up the one-time infrastructure, but also the ongoing operational expenses. As I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, when staff issued the request for interest in the RV Navigation Center micro pilot program, we sent it to several agencies and only one agency expressed interest. So there is a consideration that our nonprofits, who we rely on so heavily, are becoming maxed out on their ability to serve the population. So outside of just this specific model, our nonprofits have shared with us that they're experiencing challenges in being able to continue meeting the demand of services. Additional potential challenges continue. There is a community impact associated with opening a potential RV safe parking location. If San Leandro were to open such a program, it would be the only city in Alameda County outside of Oakland that would have such a program. There is no countywide program that offers this service, and Oakland's program is exclusively for those who are residing in Oakland. So there's the potential that with this new service that hasn't been offered in the community previously, there could be quite a demand for it. By nature, RV Safe Parking serves a transitory population. It's individuals and households that are living in a house with wheels. And so it can be challenging to determine where somebody had previously lived. There are also further operational and participant considerations. RVs hold a lot of items, and they can have the ability to spill out or be more difficult to contain than a smaller vehicle. We have spoken with some of the providers who have set up such programs in Oakland, and they shared that it is challenging with this specific population to move people into permanent housing, and that there's a subset of the population who is interested in long-term living in their RVs. So that is a consideration that my recommendation would be we would focus on moving people into permanent housing outside of their RVs, and that may be a challenge to overcome. Another challenge is that often we are seeing that those residing in RVs are lacking registration, their licenses and insurance, or even the vehicle's ability to drive. And that's one of the reasons why these programs are often 24/7, so that it gives the vehicle a space, a designated space to be when it can't necessarily be mobile. I'll now discuss vehicular safe parking. A typical program overview for vehicular safe parking is to provide a designated secure location for households residing in their commercial vehicles, or the cars that we all drive. It typically features overnight parking as just overnight parking. So most models are 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. or something like that. Access to similar amenities as RV safe parking, and again, a focus on safety and community health. Some programs also offer case management support services and connection to housing resources and assistance with transitioning into stable housing. The program goals are largely similar as they are for RV safe parking, and that's to provide a safe and secure location for households to park overnight or long-term in some cases, ensure access to basic amenities, provide connection to support services, and facilitate the transition to permanent housing. And the same, goals for the broader community to enhance community safety and public health, and promote a compassionate and organized response to homelessness. Vehicular safe parking, there are more cities and jurisdictions that have set up vehicular safe parking. Alameda County has safe parking, as well as the City of Alameda, as well as First Presbyterian Church of Castro Valley, and that's just within Alameda County. There are also programs, I will mention that there are programs in the City of Oakland, however, access to that information was limited, and so we didn't include that in this presentation. Most of the locations for vehicular safe parking are static, so they're at the same location each evening. Alameda County's program, notably, does provide 24/7 safe parking services. However, with the City of Alameda and with First Presbyterian Church Castro Valley, it's solely evening safe parking options. Amenities vary, but typically offer access to restrooms, clean water. Some offer food access or snacks and meals, and others provide connection to case management or housing support services. The cost generally for a safe parking program is lower. For Alameda County, it's about $150,000 annually. For the City of Alameda, it's a little bit higher, but it does cover, theirs is kind of mixed into it, a few different things, like a community center and the overnight shelter. So that's kind of all the programs, and it was a little bit difficult to break down the unique cost for safe parking. And then with the First Presbyterian Church of Castro Valley, considerably lower. And the expenses are solely for the porta potty services. Additional cities, Fremont and Union City, have also set up safe parking models. Fremont has a different model in that they rotate the location on a monthly basis, and their partners are primarily faith-based partners. Most are solely overnight services, and they do provide the same access to amenities such as meals, fuel assistance, and restrooms, with the city contributing $80,000 annually. And Union City has a long-standing safe parking program, which also rotates nightly, and it relies on faith-based and community centers. And their cost is also considerably lower, at around $164,000 annually. Some of the potential challenges of vehicular safe parking are similar to RV safe parking. Site availability, vehicles are a little more nimble than RVs. You don't need as big of a space. You could potentially do uphill. But when we are looking at available spaces, our first selection, our first scan was on available vacant city properties, which we have a limited availability of. There are funding resources required, both for the initial development as well as the ongoing operations. As I discussed previously, our nonprofit partners have expressed challenges in the ability to match the need for services. And there's also a question of community impact. And again, while there are more programs across Alameda County as a whole, when we open a service that serves a naturally transitory population, there are considerations of whether or not that would continue to serve those who have been longstanding residing in San Leandro or residing outside of San Leandro. Another program that the City of Berkeley recently launched is an RV buyback program. The purpose of this program is to support individuals living in RVs to transition to housing by offering a cash incentive to remove the vehicle. So the program pairs RV buyback with a placement into one of the city's shelter services. The eligibility includes those residing in an RV, large vehicle, that they've previously been identified in the city census of RV vehicles, and that the occupant must accept interim or permanent housing. So the cost that the city of Berkeley has proposed is $175 per linear foot. So for vehicles of various sizes, it ranges from about $5,000 to $7,000 per vehicle. There are several options for consideration as we move forward and explore a safe parking program in San Leandro. One of the options for consideration, we've heard community questions, feedback, that there appears to be available space at the San Leandro Marina, which could potentially serve as a location for either RV or vehicular or a combination of parking. I will note, however, that this would be a term limited option, and there are only distinct areas within the marina that would be an option for consideration. But with the Shoreline Park in development, again, this would be term limited. Some of the potential benefits for this as a location, I will share that staff have scanned all of the available city properties and parcels and all the parking lots throughout the city in an attempt to identify those that are either not utilized or underutilized. And again, based on community feedback and based on some of the work that's being done at the marina right now, that's why that was one of the options selected. So as some of the potential benefits for this location and this program, it does have the physical space required to host RV safe parking and or vehicular safe parking. And as these specific areas are under city purview, it wouldn't require a cost for the land. For considerations for this such a program at this location, there would be, even though the land wouldn't cost us anything, there would still be capital expenditures, there are no utilities at this location, and it would still require ongoing operational funding. We know this location, there would be community impacts here. This is a public open space. This is an area that has experienced a lot of challenges around vehicular homelessness. And there are also economic development impacts for consideration. As I mentioned previously, this location does not have facilities, restrooms, sewer, and so we would need to put those resources there. And there's also unknown regulatory limitations. There's a lot of various regulatory agencies that we would need to work with should this be an option for consideration. The second option that staff have identified is doing a faith-based partner roster. We've engaged several of our faith-based partners in this program, in other programs, and this could be an option to re-engage them and develop deeper partnerships to see what services they're already offering, how the city may be able to support, or if they're interested in hosting additional services in the future with the appropriate level of support. For considerations, and I will say one of the potential benefits is that just for this first stage of the process, it would be a lower cost option to engage the faith-based partners. For longer term considerations, depending on site availability, there could be ongoing operational funding as well as the upfront capital. Community impacts are largely to be determined. If, say, we found a location that was willing to host such a program, we don't know what the community impacts would be without knowing where that location is. And then for operational logistics, the sites would need the appropriate physical layout to be able to support such a program. Options 3 and 3A are similar. So it's commercial property acquisition for safe parking. So they're calling this the Nimitz model, that we go out, we acquire property, and then we are converting it into a different use. So the potential benefit is that we could seek a site with the appropriate physical space requirements. However, one of the major considerations is funding. One-time acquisition of commercial properties is quite considerable. And that would not include the ongoing operational costs as well. And like faith-based rosters, the community impacts are to be determined, as we wouldn't know where this location might potentially be. And there would be operational logistics to make sure that the site had all the needs and would support this program as well. And just to give an idea of potential costs, as of October 2024, these are vacant industrial properties for sale, and the average total cost is $3.4 million. And then for non-industrial properties, the average cost is $3.8 million. Option 3A is similar. It's also commercial property acquisition, but rather than setting up a safe parking site on this location, it could be developing shelter or interim housing that directly targets vehicular homeless population. And so it could be seeking a site that has the availability for development of shelters or interim housing. Again, the consideration here would be the acquisition costs at the onset, as well as the ongoing operational. And the community impacts to be determined, as with the other programs, and operational logistics to be determined. Option 4 is an RV buyback program. The benefit is that the focus here is really on moving people out of their RVs and into permanent housing, and it incentivizes people moving from their RVs into housing. And if the city acquires those RVs, then we can potentially remove those from the city as well. It reduces vehicular clutter and safety concerns for encampments, and it does, you know, work to keep our city a more manageable public space. It would require operational funds for buyback. It could reduce RV homelessness. However, one notable consideration is that it would require availability to move households into shelter. And I'll just say that I know, yes, we did just open the Welling interim housing, and that relies completely on referrals from coordinated entry. And so while it may overlap with the RV homeless population, based on the home key statutory requirements, we are not able to hand select who goes into that program. Option 5 is collective advocacy for Alameda County to lead such a program. The potential benefits should our advocacy be successful and they set up an RV safe parking program is that a community need is being met. Considerations, however, I will say most notably is that even if we're successful and they open up a program, without the city being the ones to spearhead this, we would not have local control, and it's unknown what the community benefit would be directly. Thank you, and I apologize for going slightly over. Our questions this morning for committee direction, what options would the committee like staff to continue exploring? What options are off the table? And did we miss anything that you'd like to share feedback on? Thank you.
Okay, so thank you for the presentation. So our time we will take public comment on this item. Seeing that, I'll close public comment. We'll come back to the members for questions and discussion. Councilmember Bowen, or Vice Mayor, please.
Good morning. Thank you for the presentation. I've got lots of questions, and I think this is going to be a robust discussion. I'm trying to figure out where to start. The slides just kept going. The Alameda site that's not too far from here, that one is specifically just for cars, is that the distinction?
That's correct.
Okay. Has the county thought about doing an RV site? Or would this advocacy be from like the ground up? Like it's been off the table?
For Alameda County's location, it is not viable for RVs as it is on the Fairmont campus, and so the RVs can't access that location. For many years, I would say, staff across cities have been advocating for Alameda County to develop such a program in a location for them to take the lead on searching and identifying funding for this program.
And I'm guessing the response is, what has the response been in terms of that advocacy?
Sure, I think that Alameda County has been receptive to the idea, and I've yet to see any notable action.
Got it. Two things I kept thinking about as you were talking about the options was funding for it and how much any number of these options would cost, and then would we be able to continue the programs considering what the overall goal was? Right, I think it is to get people housed or give access to services so they can be on a path to be able to be financially sustainable and be able to be housed. Obviously, that's going to depend on whether a person wants to be, and I know that you mentioned that. And so, which, in your opinion, of these options would be the most effective if we had the funding first, and then since we don't have the funding, what do you think, looking at these options, would be the most viable in terms of getting us to that goal?
What a zinger. I'll say that if we were to explore RV safe parking, I would recommend that the program be 24/7, as we have heard feedback that one of the barriers in people moving from RVs to housing is that they do not physically want to leave their RV because they fear it'll get sighted or towed or that it'll get broken into. And so with a secure location that they know they can stay there 24/7, I think this, we could focus more on being able to move people into permanent housing. As well as, I would not recommend that without doing an RV buyback program. I think it's critical that if we are moving people into permanent housing, we are also not contributing to the ongoing availability of RVs to reside for individuals to reside in.
That makes sense. It also, that's super helpful information. The as I was looking at some of the options, the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. options seemed attractive because it would have a lower fiscal impact, but it is not as effective, especially if you can't move the RVs or some of the RVs. And so would that require us, could we, I'm trying to figure out what options would work well together, because like you just said, you know, it wouldn't make sense or it would not be as effective if we didn't also have the RV buyback program, but we also don't have the shelter capacity to be able to get, even if we bought back their RVs, mm-hmm. to put them somewhere in San Leandro, could we help them be housed elsewhere in Alameda County? So it's not necessarily that you have to go somewhere in San Leandro.
Yes, I think that's possible, and it takes longer. And so it wouldn't necessarily be, the RV buyback program in Berkeley is a quick turnaround. It's, we've got you a place next week. So if we were to set something up, it would, and it, we weren't relying on city resources, it really depends on the availability of resources across the county.
And could we do a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week safe RV parking program with a faith-based partner if we were able to find one?
If we were able to find one and they were willing, it's something we could explore.
I would imagine that these options aren't, that we could pursue multiple, have them work in conjunction together. So I'm thinking the faith-based, trying to work with a faith-based partner and do the RV buyback program as well as advocate for a site with the county. That's, I feel like we can't just do one of them. You know, we would be able to, I think, go from where we're at right now to the end goal of permanent housing without pursuing multiple options.
Sure, and I'll just clarify again. My response is based on the availability of funding. And I do think that while there is a need in the community, it is a very difficult program to set up. Based on the size of our city's homeless population, I think it would be quite an undertaking for our city to spearhead RV safe parking.
Understood. I'll come back.
City Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, committee members. I just wanted to elaborate on Vice Mayor Bowen's question with the answer, and thank you, Jessica, for the fantastic answer. Because I believe your question initiated a two-part question. It was that money was unlimited, and what do we do with the status we are in now? And Jessica did a fantastic job answering the unlimited funds answer. We know we are not in that position, and neither are most of the other cities. And so I think I'd like to give Jessica a chance to answer the question with the status of the city, where we are today, and what she recommends.
Thank you, City Manager. Given the status of the city presently, I would recommend that we do a faith-based roster. We focus on vehicular homelessness, and we vehicular, not RV, and we advocate at the county level for the county to spearhead an RV safe parking program.
I think I was on the right track then. That's good. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. So I think that's kind of aligned with where my head was. But I do want to just explore a little bit, and I'll start with that vehicular piece, because what I saw from the slides that there's a lot more bang for the buck in the vehicular space. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's a lower lift for less funds.
that's not really my question. My question is a cost-benefit question in terms of number of people that I'm going to serve per dollar spent. Can I get more people served with fewer dollars, all else being equal?
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about this vehicular buyback program. Not that we have the money for it, but are the vehicles scrapped by the city of Berkeley?
Yes.
And do you have any sense of what it costs to scrap the vehicle?
I do not have that cost.
There has been some interesting, I think, back and forth between a county and cities on addressing homelessness. I know the county spent some time working through an emergency housing declaration. I don't know the exact terminology of what they did, so I'm going to clarify right now. But in the last year, there was a lot of hooray that the county had made a change. Are you aware of a plan by the county coming out of the backside of that declaration that provides guidance that would help us know where the advocacy would be most effective? I'll start with, I can break it down into smaller pieces. Yes, that was a declaration, right?
Yes.
I didn't misunderstand that. And there was, I think, a goal that that was going to make it easier for the county to address homelessness concerns.
The county declaration on homelessness was focused on expediting their internal hiring processes to build up their staff infrastructure to respond to homelessness in the county, as well as streamline their procurement process.
The staff hiring and procurement, or procurement being vendor organizations that would help address homelessness?
Yes.
And do we as a city have insight as to whether they have hired more vendors, expanded the services that they offer, hired more people to provide direct service for management of vendors? Do we have insight?
I'm not sure.
Going back to the RVs, one of the things that I have wondered about is the RVs. We have any variety of RV/trailer parks in San Diego. I think we might have 7, if I'm not mistaken. Do we know, are those parks fully at capacity?
No. Some of them are not at capacity. Some of them do accept RVs.
Have you made an assessment as to whether the reason that they're not availing themselves of those services, estimated 68 RVs, is it purely economics?
Some of the RVs are not eligible as they don't have registration, license, or an active license, active insurance. And those are requirements for being housed permanently at an RV park.
Okay, are there 20%, half, most? Do you have a sense of like why? I'm trying to break down and solve the problem in pieces. I know the
sure.
It's kind of like this intangible or intractable, seemingly intractable problem. So some of it is they're not eligible. There's just some economics. It's just cheaper to live on the streets than to pay for those amenities.
Yes, some people don't have, even if they were eligible to be placed into an RV park, don't have the ongoing available funds for the monthly, I think it's a slip rate, like a rent.
The cost per vehicle, I was trying to do some quick math up here, seemed to be on the order of $15,000 when I look at some of these programs. And again, I don't know the exact cost of an RV park, but I get the sense that it's on the order of $1,000 to $1,500 per month per slip.
That sounds about right.
So I have wondered, should we be considering moving some of those RVs just into permanent spaces if there is capacity already? Is that something that we've thought about?
It is. We've been working with our provider network to encourage them to work with those residing in RVs to move into such available amenities in the city. However, those two challenges of one, initial eligibility and two, ongoing funding, limit that often as a viable housing option.
If we were to open up a space, one thing that I really hear a lot of is risk management concerns around someone gets hurt at the location, someone's assaulted at the location. If it is a city facility, the city might have certain duty of care in the operation thereof. Have we thought about what our exposure would be, and if so, what are some of the considerations there? So I'll go to city attorney or city manager or anybody that wants to, you can come back later, but to me, I didn't hear any of that in the presentation, and so I'm curious if we thought about it.
Certainly, Mayor, City Attorney, if this is a city council program and it's on city property, then we clearly have the highest level of any liability. If it's with a nonprofit partner, faith-based partner, you could build in this, depending on the risk tolerance of the organization, we would be able to build in indemnity, insurance protections. But I imagine that might be negotiated with them as part of the deal to do this program with a nonprofit partner to minimize their risk. And so there would be some risk transfer negotiation involved in those situations.
And if I could add some of the hesitation that our faith-based partners have had with hosting RV parking or parking program is the risk, not so much from a legal aspect, but just from safety aspect of having the type of program location.
I think that as we further consider this, we need to look at what other cities have experienced, because I think that, at least in some of the discussions, interactions that I've had with individuals that participate in various support programs, there's generally a sense of deep gratitude for the support that we provide, but there's also, I think, a certain level of expectation around the quality, safety, etc. And I do want to be sensitive to advocacy groups who might avail themselves of a concentrated population of individuals to perhaps bring an action against the city because, fill in the blank, the toilets aren't adequately maintained, too many people have had their RVs broken into, the city should have done something. So just that keeps running through my head. I didn't really see it explored. We're going on for a little bit. Have some other things to do, a few more ways.
What I keep thinking about is, along with the funding, but the actual capacity to be, I don't hear as much, and it could be where I'm located versus other council members or constituents who reach out, in terms of people living in cars versus RVs. And so I'm trying to figure out where like the greatest need is in San Leandro, and balancing that with the fact that trying to address a safe parking spot for RVs is significantly more expensive. And obviously for us to try to do that as a city and as a smaller city, I think would be an unrealistic lift without real partnership with either other cities or with the county. So that first question of, you know, what options should the staff look into, or what options are out? I don't know if it's a truly viable option right now where we're at, in terms of our city budget and then just the landscape in general. And also I think about the nonprofit partners, if they have the capacity to be able to provide services and help in this way, even the faith-based partners. I'm not sure where people have the bandwidth right now to do it. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't continue these conversations so that potentially when there is more resource, we could pursue that. But the idea of buying property right now and the initial cost seems untenable right now. I'm just trying to process all this information. Where's that list? The list of the options. Yes. Sorry, I'm processing a lot. What would be helpful for me in trying to understand, like, what's the best? I really appreciate the potential benefits and the considerations, but I feel like I need more detailed information in what that actually looks like to understand. But in terms of, you know, the collective advocacy for Alameda County to lead, I think that my understanding of who should provide resources and who potentially has more access to resources, that feels like that's something that we certainly could begin that process of doing more of and trying to understand where we can move the needle in that way. But yeah, I'll let the mayor continue, and then I'll figure out how to put my thoughts together.
Okay, so I do want to go back just to one of your first slides on the accounts. If you could go there for a second. I am curious, the number of vehicles, because we've got, I think these are people, 228 people, and whatever the exact number is, right? We'll say 250, I really not focus on the precision of the number. Because I think directionally it's accurate. When we look at a number like that, do we know how many vehicles that is? It's like if I look at RVs, I see 68. Would we think we typically divide by 1.5, we divide by three people per RV, or two people per car is the typical. Sometimes it's four, sometimes it's one, but it's typically two. Do we have some sense of the vehicle population?
So a point of clarification is that that figure of 68, if we're looking at 2024, that is vehicles and RVs. 228 is the city's total unsheltered population. I do not have the data. This is from the biannual point-in-time count, and it is not broken down into vehicles versus RVs. It's a catch-all.
And so thank you for that clarification, because, I mean, you wrote it. I just, you know, but what I'm particularly interested in now is that's people, 68 people living in vehicles and RVs, that I would think that in a number of cases, that's more than one person. So I'm trying to process down into, I don't need space for 68 vehicles in San Leandro. I need space for 40, or 30, or 20. Right? Because there's multiple occupants per vehicle, potentially.
So the way that this data is collected is those are unique vehicles. Those are households. So there's...
So they don't... When they say... So let's go to the 228. Is that 228 households, or is that estimated number of people?
That is estimated number of people.
And I had assumed that 68 was the estimated number of people living in RVs or vehicle, hence the third column, percentage of unsheltered people living in vehicles and RVs.
I apologize for the confusion. The 68 is households, and so that could be more unique individuals.
Okay, thank you. That was just to clarify, to try to frame the number of vehicles that we might be talking about. On your options, can you go back to 3A? Like I was taking some notes and I don't know what it passed me. So basically it's Navigation Center 2.0, the second Navigation Center.
Correct, with a focus population of vehicular homelessness.
In this, I mean, there's a clear distinction between permanent supportive housing, congregate shelter, and everything in between. At this point in time, has staff thought about, explored, where in that continuum, if we were to do something like a 3A, where in that continuum we would want to land? And if the answer is no, that's fine too. I'm just kind of curious where we are in our thinking about this.
I have not yet thought about would it be an interim shelter or a permanent housing site.
Okay. Right now we've got, I was trying to process like the various choices. I know that we have a location entitled on Washington near Greenhouse Marketplace, but you know, I'll say we, but it's broadly the royal we. We're struggling to get that built because lack of funding, maybe the project-based vouchers that we were advocating for in D.C. was supposed to maybe help along that avenue, but I do wonder, is there going to be funding out there? Are the markets going to support, if we're having trouble getting, the community and the investors, et cetera, are having trouble getting that location built? What's that signaling to us? So, again, like Vice Mayor, I'm just kind of trying to process and figure out of my options, what are the most viable and practical? Because the last thing that I want to do is spend a lot of time analyzing, right? We're burning through staff budget, analyzing, but we're analyzing our way against a wall, and we're really not being productive at helping maybe even our existing population, where we can't help them in other very practical, viable ways. That's a lot of verbal processing there, but that's kind of as I'm thinking through, like, what do I want to, where do I want to end up on this? Out of your options, the absolutely least exciting one for me is the marina. Me personally, I don't like that option at all. I think it is literally investing to create a space that we look to tear down because we're looking to build a park there. So it's very short-term thinking. that directly is anti-strategic, the long-term vision of what we're trying to accomplish. I think that we need to be purposeful around the fact that vehicles and RVs are mobile, and that inherently means that if we are one of the very few providers in the county, that we are literally, people will literally flock to San Leandro for the services. And so what residents and our businesses have expressed concern about is the growth of encampments. If we're not actually addressing that issue, we're just providing more services, and we still have the encampments because new people have come. That I do get concerned about we're not actually addressing the core issue that's expressed by residents and businesses, and we will have spent more money. The last thought that I'll offer is, broadly speaking, I do think we need to concentrate efforts to the extent that we need to proceed at this time. What you offer is big picture guidance I am inclined to agree with, because I do believe that the county plays a significant role in this, and we need to encourage the county, whose budget is many, 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 many times bigger than our budget, to show some leadership in this. So when you talk about advocacy with the county, very much believe in that. I know that I have been offering some, I'll just call it non-public advocacy with supervisors, with multiple supervisors at the county. I do think that from what I saw, the least expensive option tends to be the faith-based approach. I am inclined to believe that a rotating program is much more viable. So I do think that as kind and welcoming as many faith-based organizations are, it can become a heavy lift over 2, 3, 5, 10 years. And there's almost an expectation and an entitlement that can develop. And those organizations typically don't have the resources to address that type of risk. So county advocacy, faith-based, and vehicular. I think all else being equal, I do think that vehicular focus is superior to RV focus. Because I do get quite concerned about RVs that are not roadworthy and that will essentially get stuck someplace on city property. And the litigation will essentially cause the city to become the responsible party in some way for someone that is not able to move that vehicle. So we've taken on all the responsibility of the future stream, as opposed to we're doing a good deed and helping someone through some temporary crisis. Instead, we become a trailer park that loses any eviction rights and that type of thing. So that's trying to boil it down for me.
The City of Alameda's model for their vehicular safe parking, the annual operating cost of it is significantly more because it also has a combination of the safe parking and the day center and the overnight shelter. I just was thinking about when having a safe parking location and then the need for including access to services, if there's a way to be able to coordinate with the services that we're providing at the navigation center. I know we can't, you said earlier, we can't choose who goes into, who gets housed at the navigation center, but I do, you know, like the mayor articulated it well, the direction that I think the initial steps we could take and what's, I think, to better utilize staff time and also figure out what's going to be the most effective. That model is also only 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. I just, like, in terms of the cost and services, I would be curious to, like, learn more about how well it's working for the city of Alameda. With their 30 passenger cars, I look at Fremont, and they only have 15 cars for a significantly double the homeless population, and significantly more cars, 379. So I can only imagine how you choose or who gets those 15 spots in a rotating basis. That feels very complicated and difficult. And so you don't want to make it hard for people to access the resources too, but really focusing on whatever we do that there's actually access on, obviously, to just, you know, restrooms and food and waste services, but services to be able to improve the situation that people are in.
I'll add one more thought. I think that many of the programs that you describe focus on individuals who agree to move out when housing is found. I think that that's a necessary condition. I feel pretty strongly about that one. So I do believe that when you're dealing with people that literally had someone say to me, well, I'm totally into the RV scene. That's the way I want to live. I don't think that the city should become a business owner of a trailer park. I don't think that that's our job as a city, to provide a service that, I mean, clearly others are providing that service. And then you start really getting into this discussion about, well, why are we better, or what role are we playing that they can't play? And very much, and I've said this multiple times, I want to support our most vulnerable. I want to support that family whose child has cancer and both parents have lost their jobs and they're living in a car. And that's just so very wrong. And we need to find a way to support those people. And to me, that's very different from someone who says, yeah, well, you know, I don't want to pay rent for a slip because I have too much fun using my money to do other things. And then it becomes our job as a city to support that. And so, I mean, those are the extremes that I'm describing. And so I directionally, I very much want to be focused on those with emergency needs, with emergency medical conditions. They lost their jobs because of those emergency medical conditions, and recognize that the county is there as a safety net and really should be helping us support. I have no problem with the idea that we work with the county, but it's that safety net system as opposed to a lifestyle choice that I don't want to be where we focus our attention. City Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I think Jessica's shared a lot of information to this morning regarding options for programming. And at this point, we're really looking for the body, the Rules Committee as a body, to direct what is the next step for our human services staff, Jessica and her team.
So I think at this point in time, I mean, part of what you've heard from us is that we're processing, right? I personally don't have a strong feeling coming out of this presentation right now that we need to take an immediate action. I'm concerned that I don't yet feel like I fully understand the cost effectiveness, what the full cost ramifications would be. me personally, I like the way that Director Lobaton has framed it as a possible path. All the things that she has suggested, these would be the ones where she would focus her interest potentially. At this point in time, me personally, I'd like to just kind of process everything that I've heard and perhaps revisit this in several months. I don't feel like I'm ready to take an action yet. And I know it's not an action as in taking an action, but it's in my providing specific guidance.
I think I want to give some direction. So while I love this presentation, I don't want us to stall it because we're processing it as well. Because I think what I'm trying to process are exactly what the mayor mentioned, right? Like, what is the actual fiscal impact of it? How much would this cost? Where would this funding come from? And really better understanding how effective is this in solving the problem that we're trying to solve for and also serving our most vulnerable populations. I think about the unhoused kids that are living in our city, that are going to our schools, and making sure that they're able to have a safe place to sleep at night and access to resources. And I fear that the number of people living in their cars or RVs will continue to rise. And so the more action we take, the sooner is better. That being said, I think that in terms of direction, if we can continue to speak to our faith-based partners in the city and nonprofit partners to see what the capacity would be to continue to reach out where interest would be, also to try to understand how effective an RV buyback program would be, because that could be a strong incentive for somebody who's in an RV that maybe cannot move, and so they are really stuck. And this could be a really helpful way to obviously have some funding, but then the second piece of that is to prioritize getting those people into permanent housing. And then obviously back channel advocacy that we're having with the county, but trying to create a much more strategic plan for advocating to the county to say, like, we as a city are willing to help lift as much of this work as we can, but we really know that there's a need. We can't do it alone, so how can we partner with the county to be able to do something more effective for people living in their RVs? So that would be my suggestion, is to, in all of the work that you are doing with your team, which I know is a lot, as long as those conversations and this work is continuing to move along, I think that will help us start in a much better place when we come back and have to make a decision about what the next action is.
And so I'll pile onto that just a little bit. Like, very much when I think of those most vulnerable, I think that adding kids. We do know we have relationships with SLUSD, SLZUSD. They have their list of their kids, right? And they have a sense of where they are staying. And to me, the targeted approach, subject to all the legal considerations, right? You know, eager advice from legal, but just from a what we want to do is start with those that absolutely positively have the longest long-term impact. Right? Keeping a child out of poverty, keeping a child in a home of some type where they can learn. You're talking about 50, 60, 80 years of impact. So I think that that's really, really important when we think about who some of our most vulnerable are. I do think that those faith-based programs, as you've presented them, tend to be the least expensive. They also tend to have parking lots that are used most heavily once or twice a week. So I think the efforts that you take being aligned to the significant cost considerations that we face as a city, particularly in this current environment of uncertainty, economic uncertainty, with sales tax revenue falling and the like, we want to be very, very mindful of how we spend the dollars that we have. One other thing that came, let's see if that'll come back to mind. I'm going to jump into it. Okay. For me, and I'll kind of look for consensus, buying a property right now at $3.5, $3.9 million is off the table. I don't see that as a viable thing that we can do when we've got lots of other properties, e.g., church, synagogue, parking lots that we could take advantage of. So for me, Marina was off, and the buying a building is just off. It's not very practical right now, given where we are. If one day the residents want to give us hundreds of millions of dollars in the form of a bond, we might consider that. So at this point in time, I'm going to go to city manager. Because ultimately, you are directing staff on our behalf. Do you feel like that you have the guidance and the sense of where we're coming from as a committee? And if you need clarification, please ask a clarifying question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So just to clarify on your last two points, because I was typing, I didn't see Councilmember Vice Mayor Bowen. Mayor, you had mentioned buying the property at this time is off the table, and the marina at this time is off the table. I'm saying that from Vice Mayor Bowen, so we have a consensus that no matter where we go, we won't be going in that
direction. That's not the direction that we're going at this time.
Okay. And beyond that, we don't have new direction regarding anything else, but what I would share is what our team will continue to work on, which is what they've already been working on, is advocacy with the county, working with our faith-based groups, and looking at behavior, partnering with our faith-based groups. Just so you know that Jessica is also on the Housing and Homelessness Task Force with Allegheny County, so we continue to work with them. I chaired the City Managers Association, and last week, I believe it was, we had a county come speak and share some information about the task force and what we're doing. So we continue to work in this space on a daily basis. Is there anything that I missed? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I guess in terms of continuing to do the work that staff is doing, I wanted the looking into the potential of the RV buyback program, if there's a way as an incentive or a way to be able to help.
So we would get the committee to say that that's the direction we want staff to spend time with.
Is that a large lift? However you want to quantify what large lift?
I think that we could continue exploring that in partnership with our nonprofits as an incentive, as they are already working with this population to move them into permanent housing. I think that the piece that would require additional clarification is that it would require financial commitment because it would be buying back the RVs.
Jessica, just for clarification, cities that have a buyback program, do they have a place for the individuals to go once they buy back the RV?
Yes.
Okay, so I think that would be the clarification that I need is the committee asking us to look into a buyback program with housing. Because that's the two-step of the buyback program.
I guess in my head, when I'm thinking about looking into it, is like what would that program actually look like in San Diego, or how could we how can we put that in our toolkit in providing services to those that are in San Diego that are living in RVs? Right now, my understanding is that the city wouldn't what does not, because we don't do that. I don't wanna understand what that would, could that be something that we do? That doesn't mean that like we as a, that we're saying that we're going to do that now, but absolutely the permanent housing piece of it is part of the RV buy bucket. Not just that we would pay, buy it back, but that we would try to find housing. And could we look at, in the conversations with nonprofit partners, not just in San Leandro, but throughout Alameda County, say in San Leandro, we would be willing to pay to buy it back. Could, you know, we partner with us to provide a space for one of our families if we were able to do that? Just as, just trying to understand like what some good options could be.
Would my committee member be willing to, as a direction, be willing to say that we continue monitoring what Berkeley is doing? Like, how is it working? Is it working? How much are they actually spending beyond the cost of just the RV buyback? I.e., get more information. Would that be sufficient?
Yes.
Okay, so I think you've got what I would call like three actionable things, like go and talk to the churches and synagogues, etc., right? And when you talk to them, focus on the vehicles and the most vulnerable. I think we have consensus. It's really finding that mechanism that we can legally focus on the most vulnerable and, you know, advocate with the county. But let it not drop off the table, this concept of an RV buyback. We're monitoring, because I know that you do that. I know you spend time on the homelessness task force and you're hearing what people are doing, and it's just continue to be attentive to the things that are happening out in the community in, you know, Greater East Bay, Peninsula, etc., so that we can be the beneficiaries of some of those good things that are happening, but that we understand the full cost of those things.
Thank you.
A little bit more clear? Okay. At this point in time, we're going to move to our next item, which is item 2C, the Safety Ambassador Program. And we still have Director Lebanon informing us on how things are going.
All right, thank you so much, and I promise this presentation is considerably shorter, providing an update on the Safety Ambassador Program. This morning, the agenda will be background on the where this program idea stemmed from, discussing the Safety Ambassador Program model, identifying options for moving forward, and discussion of next steps. Also, as part of the Housing and Homelessness Priority Work Plan, developed in May of 2023, was the project to housed under Addressing and Preventing Homelessness, non-sworn safety ambassador program. And so really though it predates me, my understanding of the goal of this program was to provide a response that was separate from outreach and casework that is already done through nonprofits, but can focus on low-level offenses, such as somebody sleeping in a doorway or somebody being displaying behaviors that might not be appropriate for outreach, but also to continue relying on the police department would be a drain on police department limited resources. And so the Safety Ambassador Program is a program that is currently running in downtown. And as we heard from Morgan Macros earlier this week, is a quite well-utilized program. The Safety Ambassadors launched in downtown in 2021, and the services provided include on-the-ground control to increase visibility and safety, provide assistance. They do business outreach and regular check-ins to address the needs of this community and how it's being impacted by unsheltered homelessness, to conduct street outreach by engaging with the unhoused individuals, connecting them to resources, providing them meals, and really trying to play that intermediary role. Their overall goal is to create a clean, safe, and welcoming public space and to reduce the burden on the police system. So seeing this successful model and in support of the priority to develop a citywide safety ambassador program, staff have been in an exploratory phase, essentially since October of 2023, where we began identifying what are pilot expansion sites, where could we do this across the city? Are there different marketplaces where we could launch this program? Are there different districts we could launch this program? And prepared, did an internal review with community development and economic development to identify several of these pilot expansion sites. Ultimately, we did land on focusing our efforts on the greenhouse marketplace, as it has long been impacted by homelessness and really wanting to support the vitality of that marketplace. Staff had several discussions with Kimco Realty, which is the property manager, not for the entire property of the greenhouse marketplace, but for a majority of the greenhouse marketplace, around the idea to bring safety ambassador program to that marketplace and offer these services there. Based on these conversations and the interest and desire of Kimco Realty to bring this program, staff sought council authorization for to allocate funds to Block by Block, which is the provider of safety ambassador services in downtown San Leandro. And council approved $400,000 for this program, for the Safety Ambassador Program at Greenhouse Marketplace. So that was in June of 2024, and in the months following, the program was difficult to actually get to execution. And in September of 2024, after several months of trying to get this program in place, the city did notify that we would be pausing our efforts to explore the program at this location. And in March of 2024, staff did re-engage, were able to re-engage with Kimco Realty, where they did share that they were not interested in hosting this program, largely due to the fact that while the city does have funding for 1 year of the program, we don't necessarily have any funding beyond that. And they're unsure if that is something that they would be able to financially support in future years. Given the Kimco Realty is no longer interested in hosting this program at Greenhouse Marketplace, staff have identified three options for moving forward. We can identify alternative locations to explore a safety ambassador expansion program. As I mentioned, there are existing funds in our budget to support this program. We could alternatively allocate these funds to support the alternative response unit, which has an annual operating cost of about $1.2 million. And so we could reduce our fiscal year 26-27 request for funds and offset it with these existing funds. A third option is we could discontinue the safety ambassador exploration and return those funds back to the general fund. And those are our options for consideration today.
So my time will take public comment on this item. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Come back to council for questions and discussion.
Thank you, Jessica. The options for moving forward, does, if we, for example, if we allocate the existing funds to the ARU, does that mean we are no longer looking into potential other sites that we could expand the program into?
Yes.
Okay. If we were, I'm just looking at the time from October 2023 to March 2025, if we spent the $400,000 on the ARU, even if we found another location, would that money be, when would we actually have to expend any funds for the program?
So if we start looking for an alternative location, it really just depends on several factors of contract negotiations, their willingness, making sure that it's actually a viable location for safety ambassador services. So I would say, you know, it probably could take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. So that would look at expenditures in the next fiscal year. And that's, I would say that's being like maybe slightly aggressive, so maybe a little bit longer.
Okay, and have there, the safety ambassador program in the downtown right now, have other businesses around the area been interested, the idea of expanding the downtown safety ambassador program? Are you aware of any sort of feedback that there's a desire for that? Personally, I would love that, so I will express that, but I'm just curious what you've been hearing.
I know nothing further than what I heard from Morgan earlier this week, which is that, you know, there seems to be well utilized.
Since maybe city manager could share, I'm trying to remember the borders right now, or the area of which, like how far north the safety ambassadors go. Does it cover Central Callan and then a little bit more, or is that?
Yes, I believe it goes Central Callan and up to the library, and then. Director Leah, please.
I don't have the exact.
So it's a little confusing. Safety ambassadors downtown are actually under community development, though it does have impacts on human services. I don't have the exact locations, but we can get that to you for sure.
Okay, a couple of questions on my end. Do we know why Kimco backed out, or are we kind of guessing?
Sure. So they did share that after 1 year of operations, we have one-time funds. We may have funds in the future, but we don't know. And they shared that without ongoing funding commitment, it didn't seem like a viable choice for them, and that they wouldn't likely be able to incur the expense to cover it. And if they decided to expand their security services, they were more inclined to do 24/7 security rather than a safety master program.
And then I know there's a distinction between the cleaning ambassadors and the safety ambassadors. Are the cleaning ambassadors paid for through the assessment, but we essentially fund the safety ambassadors, because I remember Morgan talking about 95.5, and it seeming to imply that there could be an expansion of service if we paid for the service.
My understanding is The city pays for 90% of the services of the safety ambassadors and the cleaning ambassadors. I think they get the same wage. But I'll share that the focus of our exploration was just on safety ambassador services, not on cleaning services.
Yeah, I just want to go to city manager. You know, in your discussions, one of the considerations with safety ambassadors is that by being present, there could be a mitigating effect on the likelihood of crime, i.e. crime goes down. Do we have any reason to believe that it is having an impact by having these individuals present? Have you heard anything to that effect?
I have not heard anything to that effect, and I say that because we do not have data that shows what crime stats were specifically right before the safety ambassadors came in and what they were at.
Okay. I know that we've had some challenges with data and data systems and all that kind of stuff. Let's talk a little bit about greenhouse. So the way I'm, well actually, right before that, the $400K is ARPA money. Well, it was the reallocation of the ARPA money.
Correct.
So as far as we think about this, we don't see this as a, at least currently, we don't see this as a permanent commitment to this type of program.
Correct.
Okay. So we right now are talking about moving around just a pot of money. Okay. I think, you know, my guidance would be, I do not think that we should reallocate it to the ARU. And that's pretty simple because I think the ARU is mostly funded with one-time money, if I'm not mistaken. And so that kind of makes that withdrawal even worse if we're not able to come up with $1.2 million instead of coming up with $800,000. It's just, it's not really solving a problem. It's just making us more dependent on one-time money. So I definitely do not support option number two. I do think that finding some way to think about either Bayfair or the greenhouse marketplace, like revisiting this conversation as to whether this should be a long-term investment in the city, I think is a good thing. Because strategically, when we talk about economic development and supporting our tax-generating businesses, you know, places like the Greenhouse or Marina Fair, or I guess Marina Square, sorry, could be Marina Fair, Bayfair, I think that we need to make sure that when residents go to shop, they feel good, they feel comfortable, they're excited to be shopping in San Leandro. And I think that's been one of the benefits of the downtown program, is specifically that. People say, I heard people say, that it feels better, and that encourages the expenditures here in our city, that's a good thing. So do you think that we should continue exploring this? The last question, or kind of matter for consideration, and maybe it's implied through that statement, is I don't believe that we should just return 400K to the general fund. So I'd be supportive of long-term maintenance. If this means that we set aside that 400 so that we have some extra funding for next year, for 27 or 28 for the downtown safety ambassadors, because it's at risk of ending. I mean, that in itself is an option. But I don't think that that's the general will of the council from what I've been hearing, and we'll obviously be interested in what Vice Mayor has to say. I don't get the sense that we want to walk away from the ambassador program this time. City manager, please.
Just want to make a clarification for the record. The options here do not include walking away from the downtown ambassador program. This discussion is not in any way a discussion to affect the downtown program. The downtown program, as it stands today, is whole unless the council tells us to do something different. But that is not for today's discussion. We can add to the program, but as for subtracting anyway, we're not talking about that from a staff level.
And I think that's fair. I think I'm certainly not implying that. My bigger concern is that next year, when we reach a budget consideration, do we have it? And you know, will there be any desire in the future to cut it for lack of funding? So I just want to make sure that I don't like oscillating back and forth. For me personally, I'd like to continue programs for several years so that we can really assess or very quickly ascertain, like, cut bait and run because something is clearly not making a big impact from a cost effectiveness perspective. So I'll come to Vice Mayor.
Just to clarify, I think I understand the last comment you made was the downtown program was at risk of ending. That is not correct.
That is not correct. And the budget we have and the forecast we have includes paying for the downtown program into the next 10-year plus future. The council would have to direct us to do something else. But nothing we have says any different.
Okay. I know I asked a few questions earlier, and I see that Director Leal is sitting up here. Sorry to make you move. I want to give you a chance to, if you found some information, if not, no worries.
I have not, but we will, I'm looking right now, but we can get you those parameters, both through the mayor and the committee.
Okay, thank you so much. So a few things that you mentioned, Mayor, that I'm thinking through. First, I go to the Marina Fair quite often, and I will say that one of the things that does make it feel vibrant and safe is that there are so many people constantly there. It's actually very hard to find parking. And I think that's great, right? Like it really, and then everybody driving to the marina sees this super bustling place. And so I've actually not, when I've been there, thinking in terms of like a potential site for the safety ambassador program. I'm sure it would help. I think it would help anywhere as a cost, you know, benefit or as a benefit to an area that has a lot of people there shopping. But it's right now, I think, just this, because it's so popular, because it has been newly renovated, because there are so many people, and it's a great place for people to shop and eat. Right now, people are really excited about that. The Bayfair situation is an interesting one to me because it is one developer that in terms of the Bayfair space, and so I think you know while we want to support Bayfair and make sure that the developers are successful there, I don't know if I would want to put like $400,000 towards that because I feel like there's a lot of other options that we could potentially support and pursue in partnership with Baker. I actually don't know if I agree with, I trying to understand the argument for not putting money towards the ARU, only that, the way that I'm thinking about it is it's funded by one time funds, and so this could be a way to make it an easier lift to be able to support the program, continue it, to find $800,000 versus $1.2 million would to me seem easier. And so, you know, to say that we maybe like this, we are committed to it to continue. I'm committed to it and wanted to continue. So this could be a way to bolster that argument. So I would be open to putting the funds towards that. Is there another option for us to look into exploring another location over the next 3 to 6 months, maybe potentially expanding the program if there's a want for that? And if there's not, then we can put the money towards the ARU. That would be what I would want. What do you think, Mayor?
I really want to use this money for the Safety Ambassador Program. want to make sure that wherever our residents are, that we're supporting, everything that we can do to support spending of money in San Leandro. Wherever, I mean, Marina Square, very bustling place. Bayfair, I think, particularly because we have the Target there, and because as we attract businesses, I don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable coming across that bridge from Bayfair. Bayfair, for 30 years, the BART station has had a certain level of discomfort. I used to use that BART station 30-some-odd years ago. Even back then, it was a bit problematic. If we can revitalize that southern anchor of the city, I think there's tremendous upside. So that's why I think of Bayfair in particular. You know, I was literally in San Francisco yesterday at an Earth Day event celebrating innovators. And at that event, I was talking about San Leandro, talking about facilities that were companies that are moving into actual manufacturing could move. And one of the things that's attractive about Bayfair is the proximity to BART. And so whether it's Bayfair or another place, I want to make sure that we're creating these spaces within the city where people that come to our city in no way feel like icky or uncomfortable, and we're just creating these zones where we focus all of our attention and revitalize. And hopefully one day that's going to be fully revitalized, and we can say, okay, you guys need to take care of yourselves, and we're going to go focus on this area. But I think from the very beginning, I've always wanted to focus our attention in three areas, two areas, four areas. Because I agree with you, Marina Fair is pretty bustling. Marina Square is pretty bustling. They are, Marina Square and some of these places, I think they are doing things that make people feel comfortable. So I don't know that we necessarily have to be there. But if I look at the places where people have called me and talked to me, it's the bridge at Bayfair. I gotta say it, the bridge at Bayfair. And I think that it doesn't take a lot of money to just create that sense of, you know, you take away any fear. No one should have any fear. That's reasonable. And I think that we can achieve that. That's how I'm thinking about it. Without any further discussion.
And I just want to make it clear is I absolutely want to support Bayfair and make sure that it stays. You know, when I had the nonprofit in Bayfair and we had security and actually businesses in Bayfair at that time, it didn't, even then, it was, there were safety concerns. And so I am acutely aware of that. I just don't know if that's what's on the table, that's the direction that we want to go. And I agree, I think that we should continue to explore the safety ambassador group to see where if we also don't have a partner in the community that wants to take advantage of that $400,000 this year because of the fear that it may not be sustainable the next year. I also don't want that money to just I would want to put it towards something that also is helping make our community safer, which I think is the ARU. And so that's I don't think that it means. I want to be able to do number two and number three.
Sorry, can I share number two, number three? So just continue.
Oh, no, sorry. No. One and two. One and two.
Yeah.
And what I think I heard was kind of prioritizing the order one, then two?
Correct.
Okay. So at this point, I'm going to go, because I think I'm fine as a matter of compromise and consensus to do that. I think what you heard from me is I really, really want to focus on that number one. And if that meant that you offer someone a two-year program because you give them $200,000, you know, kind of there's a guarantee for 2 years because it's half as much money. Just being creative with number one. But if you can't find anybody, any location that's willing to pilot with us and team with us, I mean, like, you can't make people out there do that, right? And I don't want to be silly and blind to that reality that sometimes that happens. Me personally, I'm surprised at what happened at Greenhouse, because I see this as an effort by the city to address a need expressed by multiple residents. So be it, right? It is what it is. But looking for other partners, other locations where we might be able to help, I think is what you're hearing here, right? Like, in that order, and not being blind to the reality that we want to put the money to use and not just let it sit around. So I'll come to a city manager and say, do you have the guidance if you need or if you see clarification?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to make one point of clarification. So the $400,000 is one-time money that is currently budgeted in fiscal year 25, which is the year we are in today. One and two, or two?
I'm sorry, to be really clear, the year is...
Fiscal year 25.
The year is about to end.
Yes.
Right? We're 80-something percent
of the
year.
That is correct.
And so what we're, what I assume that we're effectively talking about is we will roll that money into the next fiscal year.
As an option.
Well, as the guidance from this organization, we want to continue focusing to find a home for that 400 in a safety ambassador program. But if we can't, then the next step would be number two.
So that's where I'm coming from right now. Because it's only $400,000, it's one-time money, we have to know where to put it next year. So one means you can't do two, and two means you can't do one. So you can't have it in the safety investment program or alternative response unit. What we can do is budget the $400,000 into the safety investor program for next year. If the year continues and Jessica works with other locations and is unable to find a location, she can come back to this body and say, this is all the work we've done. We were unable to secure a location for the safety investor program. At that time, does the committee council want to move this money to alternate response unit?
Yeah, I think that's... We've stated a preference, that's what we will likely do, but I think you're asking for that specifically because you have to put it on a line item so that we will continue to pursue this in 26. And it could be that, you know, 9 months into 26, you go, we have talked to 900 people and nobody wants to have these sorts of programs. We don't want to let it sit around because we have a specific funding shortfall. It's, you know, whatever, it's March of next year, we have a shortfall. And we'd like to move this money, and then we have that discussion. I would think in finance money is needed here too.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yes,
sir. No, I also want to say, and I mean, maybe it goes without saying, but it doesn't mean that we have to exhaust all potential options and continually like correct people to be like, are you sure you don't want this program? Like we do. I don't think it has to be like 9 months. You know, however long things take, but. We would love to expand the DESRI program, but also I really want to make sure that if there's a way to make it easier for us to fund the ARU, to be able to use those funds as well.
So I think just because she needs to put it on a line item,
yes.
Pointing to city manager for those on tape, we, for the 26-27 budget, we're going to budget it to the Safety Ambassador Program with the direction that if you're not able to find a community partner location, you will come back and talk about that. You just won't let the money sit there unused for 12 months.
That's correct.
Okay. So we have consensus on that description. I have had not an understanding. Agreement by that is correct. So we're going to move to item number three. Thank you again for your presentation.
Thank you for your time.
Oh. Real quickly, since I can give you a live update, so we do have it on the downtown district map, so the planners that Vice Mayor asked about. So basically, on the north is Root Park, on the west is spread on the tech campus, a little bit beyond. To the east is Bancroft, and then to the south is about Thornton Street, number one. That comes out, and I'm sending you all the link to the downtown district. Actually, you can see what the parameters are.
Yeah.
And for the district, what they define as the district. So.
And this is not nothing to answer right now, but I've had a couple of residents talk to me that are really close to East 14th to suggest that their residence is part of the district, but they're paying that fee. I heard from Morgan last campfire, that was Monday, 2 days ago, that we were not, that residences were not assessed the fee. Not to clarify right now, since obviously you absolutely know the answer, but it just kind of dawned on me right now that there was a sort of a potential disconnect between what she said and what residents have said to me. So if you happen to know factually, I don't want to create, you know, a statement on the record that's not actually or sure is true, but if you know factually, I don't see anybody jumping to answer. So I'll just put it out there as a question, because sometimes, again, there's these urban legends that develop about, oh, I'm paying for this, but they're not really paying for it, they're paying for something else.
Yeah, and I'd advise them, you can direct them to either Morgan or the staff, to Economic Development or myself or something. Because as she said, the single family owner should not be charged for, you know, that. So that was a claim. We'd be happy to look into it.
Thank you. Item number three is public comment for items that are not on our agenda. I don't believe we have anyone, am I correct?
That's right, Mayor.
So I'm closing public comment for non-agenda items. Any committee member comments? Seeing none, it's 11:02, and we are adjourned.